I'm trying to do this new thing where I don't touch my inbox the first few hours of every day.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, that's like kind of when we're most productive. But we usually just immediately start out with email, and then it's, I don't know, for you guys, it's so draining for me.
Yeah, I just delete everything.
Welcome to the Laravel IO podcast. This is Sean McCool. I'm here with Taylor Otwell and Jeffrey Way. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Thanks for coming on the show. I know this is a little bit short notice, and the things have been kind of hectic lately with the release of 4.1. So I know that you've been really busy with that, Taylor.
Yeah, very busy. And so, I got a bad cold or whatever, like the day of Laravel release, which made it even worse.
Perfect. Awesome. So you want to start by talking about 4.1 and kind of how that went and, you know, anything that happened there or just whatever?
Yeah, I think it went pretty well. It was this is our first kind of point release since 4.0, and 4.0 was such like a huge paradigm shifting release. And with 4.1, we did have to kind of like clean up a few things, and that, it created a little bit longer upgrade process than I wanted. Like, it's still not bad, but I'm hoping with 4.2 we can just have like a simple composer update and you're done. But with 4.1 we introduced one major new component, was the new SSH stuff. That was a totally new kind of standalone component of the framework. And then we also made quite a bit of improvements to routing under the hood and sessions under the hood. We introduced database read-write connections where you can have one connection that's always used for reading and one that's always used for writing. We introduced new like failed job handling for queues, so you can automatically set like a number of tries you want for your queue jobs, and they'll get inserted into a failed table if they don't complete in that number of tries. Gosh, we introduced a lot of stuff. Redis queues, improvements to the password reminder stuff to make that more flexible, a ton of stuff.
Is that database read-write configuration? Can you configure that like per model?
I don't know.
I'm just kind of curious because it's functionality that people have been asking for.
Yeah, I bet you could. I'd have to think about it.
I think sometimes people ask those kind of questions, and then when Taylor says, like, oh, I'm not sure, so many people, like, I don't think you understand. The framework's so large, you can't hold on to that amount of knowledge all in one sitting, you know? Sometimes you have to go back and look at things.
Yeah, but, and, like, a lot of times there's, like, is there a property on Eloquent model that says read connection, write connection? No, but, like, if you override, like, a simple method, you could probably do it. Like, I'd have to look.
Yeah, I would expect that to be the case. You would just have a method that you would override in your model, and it would return the correct connection string or something.
Yeah.
Well, cool. That's all very cool stuff. I've been holding off on upgrading because I want everybody to do all the testing and everything first, and then tell me what all I'm going to have to change, because the code bases I'm working in are really big. So I'm going to wait until I have a good chance to sit back and do this stuff, but I'm really excited. Some of the changes I've been looking forward to for a long time.
Yeah, we had a pretty smooth release, I guess. The first day, we had a few bugs with the URL generation stuff, but we got all those sorted out that first day. And since then, I haven't heard of anything really 4.1 specific. And I actually upgraded Snappy at work on a branch in about... It didn't take very long. It didn't really have any other big problems. And that's fairly substantial application, so.
Yeah, I haven't.
It was pretty painless. Like, I upgraded mine the same day, and I noticed, like, two, I think there was one routing thing and one related to the password reminders functionality, but you had that fixed the same day. So it was completely painless for me, and I've had no issues since then.
What do you guys think about a lot of small revisions really quickly versus... making a number of updates and then releasing revisions just slightly less frequently? Because some people have talked about, you know, when a new version comes out, there's a lot of revisions really fast. Does that mean anything to you? Because to me, I don't care how many updates there are. It's not like I'm sitting there jamming, you know, Composer update over and over again.
Yeah, there is a slight difference in 4.1 in the sense that the default minimum stability on Composer is stable now, where with 4.0, it was set to dev. And so, like, with 4.1, if I make even the smallest little bug fix, I have to tag it just so that it will go out to people. But with 4.0, I didn't necessarily have to because a lot of people's installations were still set on the default dev stability. And even if I didn't tag it, they were going to get that update. So, like, with that first day, when we fixed, like, you know, 6-7 bugs, let's say, I had to tag 6 or 7 minor or, like, bug fix releases. So it looks like a lot of releases, it's not, or revisions, it's not really any different than 4.0 was. It's just I have to tag every one now since we're set to stable.
I think that's a really good change, a default stable tag.
Yeah, it is kind of nice.
Well, cool. I saw that the Laracon US website went up. Is that at conference.laravel.com?
Or yep, conference.laravel.com. Yeah, we got the website up. And
it looks so, you know, good, too.
It's really days. A good brand. I mean, you just have a couple actions and a nice-looking thing, and it's just very nice.
Yeah, Focus Lab did the design, and they always do pretty awesome stuff, so we knew it was going to be cool. But, yeah, the monsters and all that was pretty slick. And we announced the dates and everything, which is May 15th and 16th in New York City, so... Our venue is I don't think the venue is on the site, but the venue is actually the Scholastic Event Center and Theater, which has an auditorium with, like, nice theater seating, and I think it holds about 250 people, so it's going to be quite a bit larger than the first U.S. Laracon. And they have a cool kind of at the top of the building, they have this cool thing called the greenhouse, which is kind of like this glass room with an outside terrace and stuff and cool lighting for after the auditorium talks.
That's pretty cool. New York City is an awesome venue. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Did we have 200 people at Laracon EU?
185?
Yeah. I'm just wondering, 250, I mean, another 6 months of Laravel? I wonder if that's going to be enough. I mean, obviously, you guys know better than me, but it just seems like it's growing so fast.
I don't know. It's always hard for me to judge, like, how many people will buy these tickets. But definitely there seems to be a lot of interest in it. I mean, we had a lot of interest last year. We even had a waiting list last year, and Laravel is many times larger than it was then. So, yeah. And that was 100 people with probably a good 20 or 30 people on a waiting list, so...
Yeah, it's really popping up everywhere. I'm talking to contractors. Laravel 3, for example, runs some properties on Fox Sports and a bunch of stuff that, you know, nobody I know is working on that stuff. It's just people are adopting it.
Yeah, that's crazy. And with New York City, too, I mean, we have a lot of devs just in town, probably more than we did in D.C. So I'm sure there'll be quite a few local people that buy tickets as well.
That's a good point. You can definitely. It's easier for them to travel there, and so it's easier to fill those seats.
Yeah.
Well, awesome.
Yeah, so it's going to be exciting, I think, and we've got the call for papers open on the website, you know, so anyone that wants to submit a talk can go ahead and do that. I think we'll have that open for at least another month and a half or so.
I swear my entire Twitter feed has submitted talks, like right after you launch it. Every single person submitted my talk, submitted my proposal. Every single person.
I think we have about 25 or 30 talks submitted so far.
That's great.
So,
do you know when ticket sales are going up?
We are going to start selling tickets at the first of the year. We're doing it the first of the year for some tax reasons, but we should have it up, and I'm sure we'll have pricing details then as well, but it should be pretty affordable and considering the location and venue and stuff. So I think it'll be good. We'll get it up pretty soon. I guess that's pretty close here considering we're at almost the new year.
Yeah. Do you know if it's going to be 2 full days?
Yeah, it definitely will be 2 full days. 100% sure. So we'll probably have more talks than we did last time, I think. But we also are just kind of still brainstorming a little bit about other activities we might want to do during the day besides just, you know, the speaker talks.
Yeah.
And
we
have
our
actually
fire idea. Like where each you can sign up and you can do a 5-minute talk. I love that stuff.
Yeah, that is cool. We're still batting that around. I think we definitely want to change up a few things and have some variety during the day. So yeah, that's a cool idea. We've confirmed a few speakers too, like a handful that we just wanted to invite. Like, I think I can go ahead and announce a few, but like, Sarah, she goes by Sarah MG on Twitter. She's going to be speaking about the Hip Hop VM. She's,
nice.
She works on that. Who else do we have? Jeff, Jeffrey Way will be speaking.
Who?
Yeah. Not very well known. New guy. We're just fresh face for this
giving
year.
Giving him a chance.
Except yeah. I'm not sure what to speak on yet. I was actually thinking about doing something maybe JavaScript related. I've really been getting into like AngularJS and how that mixes with Laravel. So that might be fun. We don't get many JavaScript talks at Lyricons. Like have we – maybe we've had one. Maybe not any. So that might be interesting.
Not really. Not really any pure JavaScript talks. Yeah, I tried to get Rasmus, but he was not available. So, yeah, we'll have some good talks. I think we're shooting for, I don't know, between 12 and 14 talks, depending on, like I said, you know, what other activities we come up with. We may, you know, lower or raise the number of talks.
Speaking of Sarah, did either of you get a chance to watch her talk at Nomad PHP?
No, I didn't.
I heard it was crazy good. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I have watched one of her hip hop talks on YouTube, and it was good. But I missed out on Nomad. I'll be on Nomad in March.
Oh, will you?
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, we're gonna do Laravel queues deep dive, just like all about how the queues work and stuff.
Cool.
So, yeah, it should be cool.
Well, awesome. I'm definitely going to go to the American conference. I haven't been to really New York, and so it'll be
I've never been.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. Well, what else do we have in the pipe? Let's see here. Laravel.io is coming along. A couple weeks ago, we threw up a kind of a public beta of the forums, of the new forums, just to get some people on there and using them and get some feedback and just to see what the site actually looked like and how it felt when people were using it. It's come along a lot. We really get a lot of the features in there. So we have a new site design coming in. So it'll clean everything up, tighten it up, make it a lot nicer. We got search coming in. And I think that we're getting close to like a reasonable release.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's going to be really cool because we have the forum system and we have the ability for community members to just post articles. Do you guys remember when I was trying to do this thing where I was getting everybody to write articles that on subjects that they felt were missing, you know, in the community? I call it the Laravel Foundations Project.
Yeah.
So I was working with people then, and I was really realizing that was kind of this big bottleneck. So instead of, you know, kind of doing all of this work to put out individual articles, you know, we decided just to make a system where people could post things themselves. And then, you know, the community can moderate these things and handle that. So,
yeah, that's going to be slick.
So this entire forum system, that's all custom built?
Yeah. See, part of this whole thing to me is I want people to come in and, you know, how often do people come in and say, hey, do you know a site written in Laravel that you know, is open source?
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of, you know, options here, really. So we have a full site here that does things like GitHub authentication. It's, you know, a forum, an article system. Every single thing here is fully open source and available, you know.
That's nice.
And so I'm commenting it up as nice as I can. I'm going through individual parts of it and really cleaning it up and really making it nice because I just kind of ran through that code as fast as I could to get something up. And now it's time to kind of, you know, get down and clean it up and make it nice and make it, you know, something that is worth learning from, you know, instead of just something to.
No, I mean, that's kind of the nice thing about making it fully open source is you're much more responsible for that code and you can't take shortcuts like we sometimes do because people will call you on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy how long those old forums have, like, hobbled along. Like, the first day I launched Laravel, I was like, I guess I'll make a forum, too, in case anyone actually uses this. And threw it, like, on SQLite on shared hosting. And I think, like, the same code base is still running the forum. currently.
Yeah, we have to make changes every so often, though. Because the spam bots come in.
Gosh, yeah, that's always been a bad problem with that forum. That's such a headache.
No more spam bots coming in soon.
Yeah, GitHub authentication is going to be awesome.
I think it's so nice. We're getting a little bit of pushback from a few people, but almost everyone is kind of open to it and open to giving it a shot. What I really like is we have pictures for everybody because everybody has pictures on GitHub. We have their names that people recognize because, you know, from packages, from this, from that. You'll be able to click through into GitHub and see people's work and learn, you know, a little bit more about them.
Yeah.
And I think having people's identities kind of tied to their online communications, it brings a little bit more responsibility and increases the quality of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be sweet.
Did you use any kind of package for the GitHub auth?
I did. I used a Laravel driver package for that Lusitanian OAuth package.
Yeah.
But I'm going to remove it because, for example, I need to use GitHub API version 3 in order to get the email address that somebody marks as primary in their GitHub, because you can have like as many, you know, a whole bunch of email addresses, but you choose which one you mark as primary. So I, you know, when I create your account, I pull in just whatever email address is the first on the list, because it could be any of them, you know. So I need to upgrade. I need to do something because I'm pretty sure this package I have, after looking through it, I'm pretty sure I can't just send the appropriate header to kick it up to version 3. So I'm just going to really quick write my own little thing because, you know, it's really easy to do for what I need it to do. It'll be nice because people can kind of, you know, see that too and see how that works. It'll just use Guzzle and be done. But it's a lot of fun. I have Nickster. He's Nick on IRC.
Yeah.
And he's doing the design, and it's really nice to have somebody who can do design work on this project, because finding designers to work on community projects for programming stuff is just impossible. You just can't do it. You have to pay them or something.
Isn't it crazy these people want to be paid to do work?
Well, that, but how much time gets put into programming this stuff is – I mean – how much would you charge a client to make a forum, article system, a help ticket system? How much would you charge for that?
Oh, no kidding.
And at the end of the day, the code is going to end up being some kind of like, you know, essentially ideal in a way, because we're just going to keep iterating on it and people are going to keep submitting in code. And I kind of have this policy that as long as people are following conventions, I'll submit in imperfect code for something that we do want in the site, just so that we can iterate on it later, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be perfect right out of the gate.
Yeah.
But, you know, bit by bit, we're going through and refactoring it, adding tests, commenting the tests. I just really want it to be something that people can look at and people can point at it when somebody else has a question. You know, like, how do you test this? How do you do this? How do you approach making your controllers, you know, more object-oriented? How do you handle, you know, authentication, stuff like that? Mm-hmm.
And you're using Codeception for the
test? I'm using Codeception.
So how are you liking it?
Well, I use Codeception a lot already. I have sites that, you know, take almost 2 minutes to run the acceptance test suite, and
nice.
It's acceptance tests are super slow, but when you're getting ready to deploy your code, it's so much faster than going through on your own through the browser, and it's really nice. And
does that integrate pretty well with Laravel?
I don't use it to integrate with Laravel. I don't do the functional testing that Codeception calls. I just do acceptance testing with it.
Oh, and really? You exclusively do acceptance?
Yes, exactly. Oh, no, I mean, not exclusively. I do unit testing and acceptance testing, but not the functional testing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's kind of cool about Codeception is if you wanted to test a Python app with Codeception, you could, you know, if you're doing acceptance testing, because it doesn't matter, of course.
Yeah, it'd be weird to have PHP in your code base, but I'm saying
if you wanted to, though, you could.
Yeah, it's true. It's just a browser driver, the same as like Behat, you know, anything like that.
Yeah.
I think it actually uses Minx stuff in there, but you just tell it, you know, I want to go to this page, I want to see this, and whenever you say I see something, that's an assertion basically, and so
yeah.
So how do you structure them? You know, there's the two different formats where it's a little bit more like a class, and then you have another one where it's literally just you open up PHP, and then you create a variable called I, and then you just go away with it. Is that what you do?
I don't like the class-based approach, really. I do it in just the procedural function, the procedural layout. To me, that makes sense in this context. So I'll have all my methods in the web helper. So, you know, so I can do stuff like I log in as administrator, or, you know, I send a message. You know, you can have these helpers so that your acceptance tests are a lot more DRY.
Right.
And so I do the procedural approach. I can see why somebody would feel more comfortable with the class-based approach, but I just divide my acceptance tests up into different folders that define the kind of the use cases. So I might have a folder that's like forum, a folder that's like authentication, and put all the appropriate stuff in there.
Yeah, it really does make it very easy. I mean, like, to the people listening to this, if you want to get into acceptance testing, using that method with Codeception makes it so incredibly easy.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's literally like you create a file and then you just start writing. I visit this page. I see that. I click this. Then I see that. It's as simple as you could possibly get. So it's very much a nice introduction to acceptance testing.
It's nice, but I think if you're going to use Codeception, you need to make a point to go through the entire documentation, because referencing that documentation is not that great. You know, because it's hard to search into where you want to be, and I think that the IRC channel is basically dead, because I went in there and talked to them about, you know,
think it was ever alive.
Yeah, there's like 17 or 18 people. I'm like, does anybody ever considered multi-threading their acceptance tests or anything like that? And it's just like crickets chirping.
Yeah, the Laravel channel will kind of spoil you.
Yeah, we got something pretty nice there.
Like instant help 24 hours a day.
And what, I mean, I swear to God, Machuga's on there like pretty much 24 hours a day if I log on. I don't know how he gets any. Not he's to got pick some at kind him, because it's amazing, but he's always
well,
on.
Well, it's because he has TMUX going, and what happens is if he gets paged or something, he'll get notified, and then he'll switch over to there. And so page Matt all the time.
He's got some kind of like artificial intelligence bot running these answers.
Actually, Matt developed a system that is now on help.laravel.io, and so what happens is in IRC, if somebody needs something, he'll point them there, and it's like a little questionnaire. It's very hastily built, but
I saw that.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like paste all the source, what were you expecting to happen, what ended up happening, what were the errors, and it just creates like basically a help ticket that, because, you know, when you're getting help from somebody, they come in and say, my thing is broken, and you spend probably like 10 questions back and forth just quizzing them enough to get past the fact that they didn't tell you anything. They might be using different terminology than you. The same words meaning different things. It's difficult, but this kind of thing is really nice. And over time, we're going to merge this into the new Laravel.io site, and we're going to add comments to it so people can post comments, and then they're going to be curatable. So that it's kind of like a Stack Overflow article where it goes into a knowledge base that can be indexed by Google and searched and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like we're trying to replace Stack Overflow. It's just we're already doing this thing on IRC. And if we're supporting IRC, we might as well make a byproduct. You know, we have a byproduct there. We might as well get something out of it.
Yeah, definitely.
What is the Symfony IRC channel like? Have either of you guys been on there? Are they pretty active?
It's not as active as Laravel, I would say. I do idle in there. It has about the same number of people as the Laravel channel, but it's not quite as active in discussion. But
I mean, that's pretty surprising when you think about it, because I mean, obviously, I don't know what the trends are, but surely Symfony is still way bigger than Laravel. But it's the community is so active in our area.
Yeah, it'd have to be. Symfony definitely has a larger installation base, I'd say, for sure, because they've been around for 6-7 years or whatever. But in terms of, like, trending, Laravel, I think, is gaining. I mean, we're going to become the most popular PHP project on GitHub in a matter of a month or two. I mean, just the way things are going. So, yeah, you know, I think it's just going to take a few more years to grow that installation base to be anywhere near, you know, like a Symfony type project. But.
Right. Mostly if you ask people if they could drop their app and have it in Laravel instead, they probably would say yes. But, you know, the nature of the business means that they're just not able to do that. And
And
not everyone would say yes.
No, like I was
saying
absolutely
on Twitter
true.
The other day, we're starting to get the haters. And like I was saying, I think that's a good thing, really, because it will always happen. But.
Yeah. Yeah, a few more years, I think we'll be a lot more entrenched, you know, in a lot of different businesses and stuff. Laravel does move at a faster pace than Symfony as well. So, like, you know, coming up in May, we'll already be 5.4 version of PHP and up. So I imagine Symfony won't be going that direction until they release Symfony 3, if I had to guess. But
so you're saying in May, Laravel 4 is going to be 4.2 is going to be minimum 5.4.
Yeah.
Now, is there a 5.3 long-terms LTS release?
I guess that would be 4.1. But
I'm just asking, do you have plans for an LTS?
No, I don't. But, I mean, in other communities, there are people who pick up and do that. You know what I mean? Like in Rails, you have separate people besides the Rails core team that actually still maintain LTS releases of, like, old Rails stuff.
Okay, nice.
But yeah, so someone could actually pick that up and even turn it into a business if they wanted to. But with 4.2, we are going to move to PHP 5.4, mainly because the PHP team itself is like, you really need to move to 5.4. We're not supporting 5.3 really anymore. It's end of life. You know, there's no more releases.
That's right. It is in a couple months, like, that 5.3 is at the end of life.
Yeah, I think it already is, actually. I think it's passed, and by May, well, like, the latest versions of Ubuntu, like the Ubuntu that just came out in October already has 5.5. The one before that had 5.4, the 13.04, and then 14.04, which will come out in April 2014. That's an LTS Ubuntu release, and that will have 5.5. So, even, you know, a lot of hosts, depending on the host, might only do like LTS and Ubuntu releases. So by then, you know, the latest LTS will definitely be compatible with Laravel, and several releases back even will be compatible. So I don't think it'd be a problem. Even my like totally crappy shared host is already PHP 5.4 and has been for a while.
Yeah, even Media Temple skipped 5.4 altogether and just now they have 5.5.6.
Did they really?
Oh, yep. Nice.
It's pretty crazy. It just was not that long ago that we were trying to get everyone to upgrade to 5.3.
I know, yeah.
That's good news.
I think it's just getting easier for maybe it's people are upgrading more. Like the hosts are willing to – they have this infrastructure that allows them to upgrade instead of just being locked somewhere. It just seems like things are moving along, and it's making progress a lot more real.
Yeah, internally for Laravel, it's going to help. It's going to allow us to not have to do some hacky things like with closures and stuff, how we have to do like me equals this and then pass me into the closure and do funky stuff that we had to do in 5.3.
Yeah.
So it's going to clean that up. And then also we'll have traits at our disposal in case we want to use those anywhere. Plus, it's just kind of where PHP is, and we don't want to stick around like an unsupported or an unmaintained version of PHP. So we're just going to move along. I haven't really heard a lot of complaints about that, honestly. I thought I would hear more, but really no one has said anything negative about that so far.
Maybe the people who haven't been able to get off 5.2 just don't use Laravel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of, did you guys hear about how Cincio Labs, who works on Symfony, they got that huge investment, like $6 or $7 million?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm wondering how that's going to affect Laravel in any way. Like, where's that money? I haven't read too much about it. Like,
yeah, I wish they would have been more specific on what concrete things they were planning to do with it, but I don't know. Hopefully something cool. They've been doing a lot of like just my totally uninformed, you know, observation, but they've been doing a lot of like code quality tools lately. You know what I mean? Like that code insight thing, and I don't know. It seems like they've been doing a lot of almost like static analysis type tools.
The kind of stuff that other languages in the industry have that PHP doesn't.
Maybe so.
Did Fabian ever say anything about that HTTP kernel update that he was working on?
No, I still have no idea what that was.
Okay.
I mean, he was hesitant to say anything because he wasn't sure if it was going to be able to be done, so I don't know what happened with that.
Yeah, he mentioned something about allowing some amount of persistence in a PHP application as opposed to it just starting up and dying, but
yeah,
it sounds like a pipe dream to me.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious with, like, just this week, you know, the hip-hop team announced that you can run hip-hop VM behind, like, Apache and Nginx and stuff. And I'm curious with that becoming, like, easier and easier to run, and it 100% of Laravel's unit tests run on it, if that's going to kind of, like, do away with some of that, because the performance improvements with that are pretty incredible alone. I think in a few years, I was just talking to Ian about this the other day, I think in a few years, like, we used to say, like, oh, make sure you install APC, but probably I think it would be like, oh, make sure you install hip-hop. You know, it'll just be kind of become a de facto thing, because that looks pretty awesome.
Isn't that a, like, a language subset of PHP and not just, like, fully support everything with PHP?
I don't know if they support 5.5, but they support 5.4 fully, as far as I know. Hmm. I mean, all of Laravel's tests run, and we do, like, some pretty funky stuff in some of those tests. As far as I know, it's not a subset. It's everything.
Interesting. Maybe hip-hop will get a spec.
Yeah. PHP's coming back, baby.
All right, cool. Well, you guys want to do some listener questions?
Do it. Let's do it. Bring it.
So we asked a survey. We sent out a survey and asked people to send in their questions, so we got a list here. We won't be able to go through all of them, but I think the one that's most important to the people who are listening is going to be this one about how has Robo being absent from the Laravel channel for so long impacted our culture?
I really was worried about Robo, for real. Like, I was like, I haven't seen Robo in like a week and a half or 2 weeks. I wonder if this guy's okay, because he's like pretty much a staple in that IRC channel.
He's like a mascot, but not in a condescending way.
Yeah, he's like a, I don't know how to put it without making him really mad, but he's like this relative we're kind of embarrassed of, but it's still entertaining to like be around.
He has like this sense of humor that makes really difficult to get through situations bearable.
No, I think to me, Robo just kind of like sums up the internet in a way. Like he's he's so like crass, but it's enjoyable at the same time.
Awesome. Okay. Cool.
I'm glad that he's back. Apparently, he's like some soccer superstar.
Yeah, I don't know about that. He traveled through Europe a little bit, and now he's just wondering why everyone in England smokes cigarettes. So, somebody who did not leave their name writes in and asks, who here has a traditional CS degree, and how has that affected the career or the type of work that we do?
I don't.
Yeah, I don't have any kind of degree.
I guess you could say I sort of do. I have a bachelor's degree in information technology, which included C++ programming and database stuff. But a lot of my school was more like computer networking and hardware and stuff. So I wouldn't say I have a traditional CS degree. It's more of like a business IT degree. But as far as affecting my work, I wouldn't say it affected me that much. What happened to me is after college, I went to work for a company that had a 6-month training program, and that's where I really learned to program, I would say, for real. So.
Yeah, I think I wasted a lot of time not having like a real computer science degree. Spent a lot of time spinning my wheels, not knowing what to study, not knowing what to pursue. It wasn't, you know, until the last 5-6 years that I really realized that there was more outside of my little bubble, and that if I just reach out, I can grab it.
Yeah, man. This reminds me. It's so crazy too, depending on what school you go to. Because like for me at my school, the professors, I hope they're not listening to this. They probably aren't. They're very old school, and so like. I don't know. They were just like they were very C++ minded and like no like graphical interfaces or anything like that and very traditional. But like I was just talking to this guy that's interning at Harvard, and one of Harvard's classes is using Laravel this coming semester to build like some kind of web app thing. And like I gave copies of the book to the class, copies of my book to the class or whatever. And so like that's, depending on the school, it makes a big difference, you know, because, like, for me, it was just, like, build this little app in C++, but they're actually building, like, a modern web app on a modern web framework and doing stuff like that. So,
no, that's a huge deal. I mean, yeah. from when I ran NetTouch, I got to talk to a lot of people, a lot of college kids, and they would tell me these stories of what they're learning about. And the sad part is it's bad. Like, even CSS-related, they're learning, like, oh, use tables for layout. I mean, they're learning stuff that's rooted in 1998.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We used Dreamweaver at my school for one class.
Nice.
For sure.
Oh. You said there was no graphic tools, man.
That was not a true CS course, though. In the true CS courses, no, we didn't really use any graphical stuff.
Yeah, no, information technology is kind of like a wide array of things that you learn. Just, you know, if you're not into computers from a young age, then you kind of should learn a lot of this stuff to catch up. But,
yeah, I could have skipped all of college and just gone straight to that six-month training program at work and been fine. The things I learned in college... I enjoyed my other classes outside of computers in college more than I did my computer classes.
Yeah.
Like history, you know, any other class, any other topic, history, English, science, that was all more interesting than a lot of my computer classes.
Yeah.
What would you say? I'm sorry, you go ahead, Jeffrey.
No, I was just going to say it's sad because it's – especially in the development stuff with university, it's such an uphill battle. I was telling somebody the other day, like, you can't really get mad at the teachers because it's like if they're 40 or 50 years old, I mean, this stuff is so hard. And we are young, and it's like I don't see myself in 20 years being able to keep up with how quickly the industry moves. So if you look at some of these teachers who are basically us 20 years from now, it's hard to blame them that maybe they're not as up to – you know, the current standards as they could be. I mean, they have families. This stuff is tough.
I think it's cultural, too, because I actually know people who are like 60 years old and who are great and brilliant. I mean, you know, I'm sure Kent Beck isn't fumbling over what to do.
No, just to clarify, I wasn't saying if you're over a certain age limit, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, but I'm
just saying, like, for your general population, especially with teachers, where they're not developing every day. They're doing lesson plans. They're teaching classes, you know? So it's very difficult to keep up on all of this stuff if we can barely do it.
Yeah, well, and teachers have different emphases, too. So, like, the head of my computer science department was, like, a genius for real. But if you wanted to learn how to write, like, your own operating system or, like, your own programming language, definitely it would have been a good place to be. It just depends on what your emphasis is. Like, but probably, you know, newfangled web apps were just not their thing, you know, so it's just going to vary so much from department to department, I think.
I think that in you know, the web development, especially in PHP, and I don't want to make this sound like a negative thing, there's this idea that school's a waste of time, people who went to school wasted their money and time, and I don't like that perspective. I feel like it could be a little bit self-serving. Like, I didn't go to school, and this is how I feel to make myself not feel bad about this. Because, you know, I dropped out of high school, and I didn't have any real education. But if I think about where I could be now if I had, like, a master's degree in computer science, I wouldn't have had to spend so long learning object-oriented programming or anything. I would have come out of that with a lot better foundation because – I think people complain a lot that you just learn theory in school, but learning theory when it comes to these things is exactly what you want to learn.
I don't think it's always as self-serving as maybe people rebelling against the cost of university. So it's like, yeah, you can do this, and for some reason our society says this is the way, you know, you finish high school and then you go $80,000 in debt and you go to one of these colleges, and then many times you aren't getting the most current. Plenty of times you are, but many times you are kind of learning maybe not necessarily what you should be doing, and you finish college and you have $80,000 in debt. I mean, I've seen that time and time again from working at Touch Plus. So I think that's sometimes what people rebel against.
Yeah, it's true. And
it
also, it's just true that not everybody has every opportunity. So some people aren't going to have the opportunity to go to the, you know, good schools for the good educations. I always find it a little bit, I feel hesitant and just a little bit strange when people start talking down on education, you know?
Well, you can come to college in Arkansas for pretty cheap. I think probably my whole college education costs, which I had scholarships as well for playing in the band, but probably were cheaper than a single year of college most other places.
Is that on the license plate? Come to Arkansas. We have cheap colleges.
Yeah, our colleges are good.
What instrument did you play?
I played snare drum.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep, fun times.
Well, cool. I have another question here that I think is more of an object-oriented programming question, but somebody writes in. Actually, somebody says Jeffrey here, so this might be Jeffrey. Is this you, Jeffrey?
I don't know.
What do you put in your Eloquent model? The question has come up a lot lately. Some people feel that they are exclusively for getters and sitters. I disagree. Might be worth having a chat. Was that you?
Yeah, that was me. I think it's worth a conversation because it comes up a lot.
Right, so there's this balance between like the Martin Fowler's anemic domain model.
Just
and
examples of what I do.
Okay.
But like just looking in some of my code, like I have some stuff for on a ticket, a support ticket, I have a method for like get staff tags that like spins through some attributes, formats some stuff. Let's see, what else do I have? See, I have lots of helper methods too. Like, is this staff member on this account? Are they pinned? When's the last time they did this? I don't know, I have a lot of helper methods like that.
Yeah, I mean, I worry that some people think when it comes to their Eloquent models, like I saw one guy on IRC bragging that his Eloquent model was empty. And it's like, that's not necessarily something to brag about. It's fine if that's how it is, but you're allowed to edit that class. You know, I think people feel like they're not allowed to do it because it breaks some kind of rule.
Mm-hmm. I think of an Eloquent model as just a class that you write, and then when you're ready to use an ORM to interact with the database, you put Eloquent into it.
Yeah.
So, like, I'll have methods, like if I have a post model, maybe a blog post, maybe not a great example, maybe like a forum post, and if I'm spinning through the forum posts, and I might want to say forum post belongs to, and then put a user in there, so I know if I should put up controls for edit or delete or something, as opposed to just comparing IDs, you know, directly there.
Yeah. Yep, I do stuff like that as well. I do think that's a hard topic, though. I agree that it's kind of difficult, especially since we, like, a lot of times we abstract out the database layer, too. Like, if you have a big app and say you're doing that whole repository thing, and it's like, what else is there? I mean, I don't know. I put validation in the model sometimes, too.
I always validate in the model. I validate. Lately, I'm using what we're calling CRUD services, right? Mm-hmm. So I might have a class called User Creator, and I just pass in an array of data, which essentially comes from a form, probably, or maybe it comes from an artisan command, or who knows where it comes from. It doesn't matter. And then it does validate. It injects that into a model, validates the model, and then calls a handler back on whatever the calling class was, an observer. It's an observer, basically.
Yeah.
And what I do is I just pass in, I allow the option of passing in an additional validator. And so in that context, I'll pass in an object that represents the form. So it'll validate the form, and then it'll inject the data into a model and then validate the model separately. And they both call the same, you know, like user validation failed or, you know, CC or whatever method. And so that's worked really well for me. And the Laravel IO code base is, I'm migrating more and more to using that method, but it's going to be completely like that by the time I'm done.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
All right. So, Taylor, where do you see Laravel a year from now? So the major question this person's asking is, are you just going to keep adding features until the framework is insanely bloated?
Well, we're kind of running out of big features. With 4.2, the things I've thought about initially are refining existing features. I still think validation of forms is kind of clunky. I mean, not necessarily the validation part of it so much, but just the whole process of like posting the form, validating it, redirecting, showing the errors. I don't know. To me, that all feels a little clunky.
Yeah.
I want to kind of streamline a few things there. eloquent
it's
always.
It's hard, though. Like, how do you do it? I know we've talked about it a few times, and it's a – I'm not exactly sure how you do it.
People tell me Symphony's form stuff is pretty good, and a lot of different community members have their own approaches they've built, which they like, and we kind of need to gather ideas and stuff. But Eloquent always usually gets, you know, a handful of improvements and fixes and stuff like that. So I anticipate there'll be another round of those. But as far as huge, just groundbreaking new features, I don't see anything real big happening. But
I know you were talking on Twitter the other day about 4.2.
Yeah.
Did anybody have any interesting ideas? I know people always bring up kind of the grunt integration.
Yeah,
I'm
still
not sure. Like, I don't know what shape that would take.
Yeah,
like,
what would integration really look like?
Yeah,
I have no idea really. I think there's been more and more tutorials written too on how to set all that up, and I don't know. I don't think we'll get into that. I don't think we'll get into any asset stuff. I just don't know why there's a strong reason to.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I'd like to see Laravel just continue to, you know, improve performance updates, that kind of thing. And I wouldn't mind seeing even some features just separate themselves entirely from the framework.
Yeah.
One thing is, I know you were talking about many-to-many polymorphic relations. That's in 4.1 now, right?
Yeah, it is.
Is it full? Is it fully supported both ways?
It doesn't eager load from the, I don't know what you would call it, the morphing side.
Yeah, morph 2 or
just,
whatever.
Just morph, like the morph 2. We need that's solvable. Like, I just need to sit down and crack at it. But it would always have some restrictions in the sense that, like, if you eager load from the morphing side, and you specify a constraint, which table are you constraining, and things like that, because there's many different tables involved, possibly. So I think there'll be some restrictions, but at least a basic eager load is possible. You know, it's a little bit funky, but
yeah,
that can be improved, probably.
When it comes to polymorphic relationships, though, they're usually not too much more complicated. You know what I'm saying? That is the functionality that you're looking for. And so you can always write your own functionality to pull back, you know, write a query to pull back the exact correct data, and it's not that big of a deal. But I know that when I have these many-to-many relationships, I just hand-code it all. And with polymorphic many-to-many, I can just shave those methods away. So somebody writes here, asking about how you feel about using Symphony components now that you've rewritten the routing aspect of Laravel so that it no longer uses Symphony.
Okay. I have to kind of backtrack on this a little bit. I rewrote it and it didn't use any Symphony. And the reason for that was not necessarily that Symphony routing is bad. It's just that we do a lot of custom stuff in Laravel that we were kind of having to shoehorn into Symphony's routing. And it was getting to the point where we were like maintaining two routing layers, and that was getting to be a pain. But then we had some issues on release with some different routing stuff. And so what I did was I pulled in Symphony routing, but I only used Symphony routing for compiling the regular expressions to match the routes. So we do still use it for that one purpose, which is, I mean, almost arguably the most important purpose of it. And one of the hardest to execute. So we're still using it for that, but we maintain our own data structures and stuff, and we don't shove everything into Symphony's way of doing things, which saves us quite a bit of time and overhead. And then also we backed off on Symphony's session stuff and HTTP Foundation, and that wasn't because of Symphony per se. It was because of PHP and the way PHP handles sessions, where if you open like a native PHP session or close it or whatever, it sets a cookie, almost like you would with like the set cookie function. And that causes some issues with like unit testing, and it breaks the encapsulation of like the whole HTTP kernel concept.
Yeah.
And so we switched back to kind of just like a simple, straightforward implementation of sessions using the session handler interface or whatever. And that's just a lot simpler and easier to maintain now, too. It's less confusing. It's faster.
So have you done some benchmark? Obviously you have. But what are the benchmarks of 4.1 versus 4.0 look like?
It's a little faster. I mean, it's not like, it's not anything crazy. It's not like twice as fast as a framework. Oh, overall, registering routes is quite a bit faster. That really is about twice as fast, just that aspect. But, yeah, overall, it's just a little bit faster.
Yeah.
So. But we still love Symfony components. HTTP Foundation is still, like, that's kind of like the bread and butter component that I can't see us ever not using in the foreseeable future. So that's still really nice.
Now, what do you guys use to deploy your apps?
Jeff?
Me first? I'm just, you know, I don't have anything too extreme. I use FortRabbit, so I can just use Git-based deployment. I have a little build script that helps me out, but, you know, nothing too fancy. But so, but then again, I don't work on some big team with 20 different developers.
With so, FortRabbit, how do you run your build scripts? Are those like Bash scripts? Because
I don't do anything too fancy. Like, I have a little Bash script that does some compilation. But again, like, my main project now at this point is Laracast, and it's not a massive app at all, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as simple as a blog. There's a lot of kind of tricky stuff, but, you know, there's nothing too extreme, so I'd rather not complicate it if I don't have to.
For the new Laravel IO site, FortRabbit is graciously hosting that for us, which is just really important, because when you have a community site, I mean, who's paying for that hosting, right?
I think it's really cool that, like, FortRabbit is really going out of their way to be part of the Laravel community. I think they're rebuilding their dashboard in Laravel. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of nice. Like, we have this framework and then a very good hosting service that's on board with us.
Yeah, that is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Every single scape. Go ahead.
Just real quick on the deployment stuff. We have a really simple setup, too, at the end of the day. And we use Fabric, which is a Python library. But with 4.1, we could really transition that to just using the new SSH component to write our deploy task in. And we could probably ditch Fabric because it really just serves the same purpose. And that's really all we do. We just execute a deploy command on the command line, and it remotes in and does a bunch of stuff, a bunch of commands.
Now, do you have any kind of like continuous integration or any tests that run before the code hits production that you're not manually running yourself as part of the deployment process?
Yeah, when we deploy to our development server, our tests run automatically, and it doesn't like reject the deployment necessarily, but it at least shows us like the test failed or passed, so we kind of get a heads up.
Now this probably sounds ridiculous, but what do you guys think of like a Capistrano or something like that, a system where when you run your deployment script, it puts all your code up onto your machine, copies over a copy of you know, like reasonably recent production database, runs your migrations and seeds, and runs your acceptance tests off that. I've been thinking about this a lot recently because I just essentially do all these things manually. I run my acceptance tests locally before I even consider about deploying, and then I put it up on the server that has the same server configuration, the same everything, and then I copy over like a recent backup of the production database and bring it all up and then run the tests on that data. So I was really thinking about how I should automate that out.
I think those are cool systems. I like it.
I'd like somebody to make something like that, like really simple, or just teach me how to use Capistrano, because I haven't taken the time.
Yeah, I've never used Capistrano. I played around a little bit with Rocketeer, but nothing for production. It's pretty cool. Rocketeer's got
Stuff. One thing I really quick wanted to say about FortRabbit, I'm using them for the Laravel IO project, and they're hosting us, like I said, for free. And it's really interesting because every time I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do now? I don't know. I don't think you can even do this with FortRabbit. And then somebody's like, actually, and they have like a really easy script that you can just put in your thing and, you know, it all works. Like the deployment file stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, that just came out maybe 3 weeks ago.
It's interesting because like I really needed something to do, so I didn't have to like manually do these things. And there it is.
It's pretty slick. Yeah, they seem to really know what they're doing over there.
They gave us a pretty nice setup too for running the thing, because you know forums can be kind of heavy, and depending on how much traffic you know Laravel.io gets and all that. I mean, we're running basically it's like a central community hub, so all the forum stuff is there. I really should look at some of the metrics for that. Do you guys have any idea about how we could have like maybe a good metrics package for Laravel.io? Like, if people are having articles on there, it'd be nice to have stats about it. But you know, just incrementing a counter in a database record seems a little bit janky.
Yeah, I wonder if there's any way to kind of automate some of that.
I was thinking maybe we hit the Google Analytics API every so often, like once a day, and pull down details or something, but I've never done that.
Yeah, me either. I don't know.
Google Analytics is pretty cool. You find out it's like 100 times more powerful than you think. And it's just really complicated, unless you want to spend 100 hours really digging in to see what it can really do.
Yeah, you really have to be like an expert. And this is like the whole idea that there are search engine optimization experts. Because normally you think of this as kind of a joke, but I mean, there are people who do like strategic content strategy and all these other things that they have to know so much to get the details, and they can do so many things with the system, like the tags functionality and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy stuff.
That's the hard thing with projects like Laravel.io or even Laracast. It's like, you only have so many people helping out, and we can't know everything, you know? Yeah. So something ends up getting sacrificed.
Well, I try to put a lot of comments in the code like, this is awful, or just saying, this is temporarily here so that we can do X. Like, I just added a search system to the forum, but it's not up yet because it's going to go up with the new design that's probably going to hit this weekend. And, you know, I'm like, I'm just doing a straight database query, really simple against the forum stuff, which as the forums grew, this thing would just not work. But I'm going to replace it with something really cool later, so it's just a kind of duct tape for now.
Nice.
All right. Good stuff. So what do you guys think we should do with this podcast? Like, so far I've been having Taylor and Jeffrey and Matt Machuga on and just talking about things like this, what's new. But do you have any ideas about, you know, maybe something, what's relevant, what's you know, useful for people to hear?
I don't think it would be a terrible idea to have newcomers come on every once in a while. And you kind of get a different perspective. Somebody brand new to Laravel, and they can ask their questions. I don't know. Would that be good or not?
Yeah, you could have someone who owns a business that's using Laravel or something too.
Oh, yeah.
Even that has like a small dev team. You could have like anyone that's written a popular package. You could have them on and kind of talk about the package some.
Yeah, that's true too. That'd be a really good idea. Like, you know, Dries Fintz, who does Laravel Weekly?
Yeah.
He has some crazy amount of subscribers now, and he's got his ear to the ground, basically. He's talking about every new package that comes out, and it's pretty crazy. But, you know, having people talking about, here, this package is here, it solves this problem, here's how you use it, here's why we built it, that's a pretty good idea.
Sean, do you find that it's hard to get people to come on?
Well, I mean, not really, because I mostly just ask you guys, and you guys are really open and really cool with it. I you know, it's been really not as bad as I thought it was going to be. But there's so many people out there who I think would be really happy to be here and to talk about these things and get their work out in front of other people. You know, when somebody releases a new Laravel book, for example, it would be nice to have them on and have them talk about things. And I've been thinking about
that. You'd have a different person every week.
Yeah, see, this is where I knew this conversation was going to go. But somebody actually wrote in and asked a question. How do you convince your clients who haven't heard about Laravel that that's not a bad thing? And I'm thinking, well, you could start with a Google search. You could go to Amazon.com and search. It's pretty hard to kind of walk through this minefield without finding something. I mean, it's everywhere and it's huge. And Laravel is not a small thing. It's like every PHP framework except for Symfony and CodeIgniter basically are smaller than Laravel now, is what it seems like.
I think Yi is still...
Yeah, Yi really has a stranglehold on China somehow. I have no idea.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, sometimes it's interesting to look at the trends. like Google Trends.
Yeah, I did it all
the time. They're stacking up. Yeah, it's some interesting stuff there.
I mean, it's also, you know, you have different types of places. So you have all these little shops that kick out just like little page after little page, little site, and their technology is ancient. Their developers don't keep up, and so you know, what ends up happening is it takes years, you know, half a decade for something new to sink in, and so there's always more market penetration, you know, to be done.
Yeah, that's going to take several more years.
That's what I always say is like we forget sometimes, like. Us and the people who listen to this podcast, we are the very small minority of people who are very much up on the cutting edge and what's coming next. But you forget there's people where it's a 9-to-5 job and they're done. They're not reading books. They're not keeping up on this stuff. They're not listening to podcasts. And that's perfectly fine. You know, they have families. But it's sometimes hard to forget that we probably represent 5% of the development community. Whether it's Laravel or any of the people who are active on Twitter and actively keep up on this stuff.
For sure. Yeah. So when I worked at that dev shop with like 150 programmers, probably only, I don't know, let's just say 10 or 12, 15 actually like were on top of like what was happening. And the other, you know, 130, it was just like go to work and go home, and they weren't really interested in, they didn't know about, you know, GitHub and Stack Overflow and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is how it was, but not that it's a bad thing even.
Well, if they're going to use the new Laravel IO forums, they're going to learn about GitHub.
Yep. It's a requirement.
Well, it's interesting because we actually have this, I hate to use this word, but like the synergy thing where...
He used synergy.
Okay, what would you rather I say?
No,
we'll go back and edit it and put it in a new word.
No, that can be the title of the podcast.
Radio edit. No, where, you know, you have this GitHub account and the site itself is on GitHub, and we keep reinforcing the GitHub social coding angle with, you know, everything that we're doing, everything that we're building. And it's the kind of thing where if we had another authentication mechanism like Google Auth or Twitter Auth or something like that, it loses that focus. It loses some power. So I don't want to dilute that because we have a lot of really interesting plans for that. So. Yeah, I could ramble on about that site forever. I really am in love with the idea of where this thing is going to go and how we're going to be able to serve the community in really specific ways. You know, somebody has an idea, this would be better. The forums right now are just kind of forums. They're divided by topics, but it's just a normal type of forum. But this thing could become anything because it's just a Laravel app, you know? You just send a pull request and we work on it, create a branch, work on it for a while and just release something.
Yeah. I think it's going to be really cool. And there aren't that many other ecosystems out there that have anything like this.
Yeah. By the time we're done, I will guarantee you that nobody has anything like it.
Yeah. Laravel is still within PHP, Laravel is still like pushing into some of those legacy ecosystems like Symfony and Zend. Like, a lot of those developers, I don't think, take Laravel seriously yet, and they think it's kind of like a toy. Like, one of the Symfony maintainers, he commits to Doctrine 2, just yesterday said something like, what if you have more than one database connection? You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't think they understand that Laravel is a very serious framework that can handle serious websites.
Yeah.
And I think it's still taking a little bit of time to kind of infiltrate those circles. But I think once we do, we'll see more and more users from there too. Cause like a lot of our user base now is a lot of, kind of ex Codeigniter, ex Kohana and Fuel or whatever. And, you know, but I think we're going to push more and more into these other ecosystems too. Having Laravel.io will be a really nice thing to have, you know, because it's just another kind of tool in the arsenal of, to tie in with that guy's one question of convincing clients to why do you use Laravel? You've got this cool framework, and Laravel.io shows it's got a big community behind it. That is committed to helping each other, because that's a really big deal. Like, who else is using this? Are we the only ones using this product? And so to have kind of this Laravel.io thing you can point to and say, no, there are thousands of other people in this Laravel boat, is going to be really powerful, I think, for spreading Laravel into businesses and you know, elsewhere.
And the ability we have to kind of push an agenda, for example, let's say in the main navigation you have a link, the meetups. And so, you know, you're using the site, you're using the forums, you like the articles, you're going to end up clicking this meetups. You're going to see the meetups that are around you, just kind of automatically. You're going to be able to search, post things. I think that we have a lot of opportunity to kind of force things in front of people. And I think it's going to be, it's really powerful in that way.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. There's so many Laravel meetups. Speaking of meetups.
I mean, it's pretty insane. Like, there's one in Turkey somebody was emailing me about.
I
it's
know.
Everywhere. It just happens and so fast.
I see, like, they post, you know, pictures of the meetups, and there's a lot of people at these meetups. I mean, like 20, 30 people. That's
it's
a
like,
lot
Taylor,
of people for a local meetup.
Taylor, does your wife realize how big this has gotten? Like,
I don't.
It's insane.
Well, a lot of times I see these pictures and I'm like, holy cow, like the picture of the Lyric, I think it was Brussels meetup. I mean, it was a big meetup, bigger than any meetup I've been to in Arkansas for any language. And it's just crazy that there's people, you know, around the world kind of gathering to talk about Laravel. But I'm really glad to see all these meetups. I really wish I could start one around here.
Taylor Otwell's Laravel meetup.
No one is coming.
It's just the Taylor like crying and eating a piece of pizza. Okay, guys. Well, I think we're at a pretty good point to stop. But thanks so much for coming on here and making this thing a continued reality.
Yeah, it's good talking to you
awesome.
Guys.
I love it.
Awesome. So we'll talk to you again soon. And until then. Maybe keep your ear on the ground for some package maintainer who might want to come on the show.
Yep.
Nice. Will do.
All right. Later, guys.
Bye, guys.